Welcome, everyone. Nice to see those who haven't been here for a while, and nice to see those who have never been here before at all. This is a treat for us. Last week, somebody came that we didn't recognize, and we said, "Oh, that's from the university." She said, "No, I just walked in." So, I'm glad to see you all here. I think we should do introductions around before we even begin.
Wendy.
Daniel.
Ron.
Jeffrey.
Sasha.
Joe.
Karen.
Edward.
Media.
Carolyn.
Paul.
Judy.
Ashley.
Luke.
Samia.
And Angie. I think you all might have some questions. I don't know how much practice you all have had or who your teacher is, but I'm very curious about that. And maybe you can enlighten us a little bit about what brings you here.
Well, our professor is Professor David Gray. He's teaching a class on Buddhism, and part of our group assignment was to visit your temple, and we chose Floating Zendo.
Oh,
good choice.
We are honored. Truly honored.
We haven't gone through the practices, obviously, but we talk about them enough. So this is a real treat for us to actually participate in something that we usually sit in the classroom to discuss.
Very different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. I always say it's like talking about swimming, but if you haven't been in the water, it's not the same. The subject is just thinking, but this is an experience. And it never ends being very, very deep and very interesting. Never come to the end of it. It's life. It's the breath of life. So I'm glad they're still teaching. I used to go as a guest teacher to Father Wright's class when he was teaching years ago. And he would invite me, and people would fire questions at me in the classroom. That was very cruel. That was and he was always wanting to argue with me about God. And we used to have very fierce arguments outside of the classroom because he was very strong-minded. I miss those days. So I would encourage you, if this labor of mind interests you at all, to find a way to do this at home, even for 10 minutes. It makes a difference in how life goes. And if you get into a stuck place, this is the kind of thing that, even though it looks like nothing is happening, this is where the essence of everything happening is. And this is always a refuge for you. Always a safe place to come back. Right here, right where you are. That's the only real place that we carry. And we can always come home. Back to where we live. So I encourage you. You must have questions. Posture questions. Practice questions. Theory questions. Forget the theory.
struggling with like something to hold me, you know, like mentally. I try to concentrate on my breathing, but it's kind of hard to.
You can let your breath breathe itself. Actually, we're not breathing it, we're being breathed. Just like we're being heart pumped. We don't do it. And if we try to boss our breath around and hold it for a long, long time, we keel over and start breathing again. Because that's what it is. So if you can trust your body, your thoughts aren't so clever. We think how smart we are, and we are really, really smart, but actually your body is smarter, and it's the essence of what we are. The mind is the body, and the body is the mind. So if you can find your basis in your body and the earth, that's what Buddha did. Buddha tried and tried, and he tried all the different things in his mind to practice and to transcend this life and this body and be better and get up there somehow in some sort of more pure and perfect place. And it didn't work. He tortured himself. He starved himself in order to get there. And finally he sat down and just sat for a while and watched his mind. And he got a very strange and very intimate view of what goes on in the mind. Oh, I'm so great. I could be rich if I wanted to be. I could be the king. I'm me, 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 me. Ta-da, here I am. And each time it happened, he said, I see you. I see what you're doing. I don't need to do that. And finally, and they say there was a challenge saying, well, what gives you the right to do this? It gives you the right to see those things about yourself. And he said, touch the earth. You see, the earth is my witness. The ground, the real place where we are, right here, right now. So if you get spaced out, touch the earth. Garden. Go dig in the dirt. Really, it's the most healing thing in the world. Because it's true. So many of our ideas are just blah, blah, blah. Not all of them, of course. We're brilliant. All of us. That's what it means to be human, to be brilliant. But we're also idiots. It's pitiful. What are we going to do? Learn to live with ourselves. Learn to live with the whole kit and caboodle. The flow of life as it pours through us, as we change. We think we're the same, but we have to look back and see that we're not nearly the same as we were even last week. Much less 15 years ago, I said last week I was born a long time ago and weighed 5 pounds. I was this big. It's such a silly thing to even think about. How can that be? It's part of the mystery of our being and the wonder of it. And the more we practice, the more open we are to the mystery and wonder of our life. Something else? Judy?
Angie, I've been sitting for about 10 minutes every day for the last 14 months. And I have changed profoundly. And I wonder, shall I increase the time that I sit? How do I know what to do?
How do you know what's enough? Yeah. I would recommend sitting more. Ten minutes is a great start. 20 minutes is better, 40 minutes is even better, a whole day, or 3 days, or a week. And we offer some of that here. We're going to have another week long in August, to which you are warmly invited at Jikoji, all of you invited. And that's a real Zen retreat. Where we sit off and on all day and sleep there and get up and sit some more. So it's a bigger experience in some ways, and it's no different in other ways. It just gives us more opportunity to cultivate this practice. But I would say follow your own inclination, and it seems like if it's making a difference, that you'll know what to do. Congratulations. Yeah. Well, I will share with you what we're studying, which is called the Heart Sutra, which we have just been chanting. This is a book by someone called Red Pine, who went through the whole Heart Sutra from beginning to end and analyzed it, really, in a very, very helpful way. I'm sure it must have sounded very strange to you, because it always sounds very strange to me and to most people who are chanting it. Avalokiteshvara, who is that? Practicing deeply the Prajnaparamita, what is that? perceive that all five skandhas are empty, what is that? And somehow was relieved from all suffering and distress. Now, how can that be? So already that very first sentence is just mind-blowing in a way. And I'm not going to go into the intricacies of it tonight, maybe ever. But it's helpful to know that Avalokiteshvara is the Bodhisattva of compassion. So this whole thing, this whole little nodule of Zen wisdom starts out with compassion. Compassion actually practicing meditation. And having an insight into how things are. Having an insight into how everything is bits and pieces. None of the bits and pieces ever stay hooked up together for very long, including you and me. And that all these bits and pieces are of a piece with all the others. We all belong together. Nothing is separate. So it says form doesn't differ from emptiness, meaning this is form. But it isn't by itself. This form is connected to a chair, connected to a rug, connected to a floor, connected to beams, connected to the dirt, connected to the center of the universe, center of the earth, to the galaxy, to the... We don't know where it stops. We don't know where we stop. We're huge. And we belong. And at the same time, we're falling apart. We came, we don't know from where, and we're not here for very long. Another mystery. How we come and how we go. And how we experience this life as we live it. They're doing a wonderful study of Zen, of meditation and the brain. There's a series on Upaya's website now of the current one, which is about how the brain works in reality, which is that there is no one place for anything. There's no one enlightenment spot. There's no one attention spot. There's no one grief spot or genius spot. It's all scattered through the brain and the body and the belly and the toes. Our whole life and body is an electric great capacity of coming and going. And practice itself is bringing all that together in one place so that it can rest, and so it can, both sides are experienced at the same time. We can't think both sides because our brain doesn't work that way. It's either black or white, this or that, up or down. We can't see both. But always it's both. Always it's bits and pieces falling apart, and it's everything alive and vivid and wild and crazy and chaotic and wonderful at the same time. The human mind tends to go into the negative if we get too narrow in our thinking and too self-conscious. And thinking about what other people are thinking about us and what's going to happen next. And actually, we don't know what's going to happen next. And if we are too narrow, we can't feel how it is for other people, which means we can't feel compassion, even for ourselves. So practice is really important for that side. For the compassion side, which our wisdom brings us to practice. And that's basically what this expresses, with a lot of Buddha's teachings saying, even Buddha's teachings are part of the whole thing. Don't get stuck. Don't even get stuck on the whole thing. Once you get stuck on an idea, you're stuck. So let it go. And be wide open for the next thing. Because that's how we happen. we happen moment after moment, and it's always new. And if it's messed up one moment, it's going to be something entirely different the next one. And we have a lot of power over that, as far as noticing how the negative wants to always jump in and just bow to it. Oh, thank you very much. I see you. I see you. There you are again. But the wisteria is already in bloom. Would you believe it? Unbelievable, the wisteria. We ate breakfast this morning. Wow. There's so many things we take for granted that if we open our view, we can begin to create enormous amount of gratitude for what holds us, what keeps us. We're not doing it. We're just skimming on the surface and saying the great me. But underneath, there's this whole life flowing through us, living us as we live. So the other message in here is that, in fact, there is no permanent self. So that always becomes troubling for people. What do you mean there's no self? There's me. I know. And of course, Buddha was a person too. Buddha got up in the morning and brushed his teeth just like we do. Except he used a little stick. He broke it off. But that was his way. He had breakfast. He got in trouble. He had a hard time. But he understood that the self is just a by-the-way thing, something that we begin to make up very early in our life as a story. And we keep the parts of the story that we think make us look good. And we try to ignore and deny those parts of the story that we don't think makes us look very good at all. And so we walk around with this mask of trying really, really hard to look okay, and trying to convince ourselves that we really, really are okay, and refusing to take the blame even if we screw up a lot, just trying to march through and be the most perfect one that our grandmother would have been proud of. So practice is about examining what it is that we imagine ourself is, how we think about ourself, and how we comport ourself in relation to our idea, because it's just a thought. It's just a thought like all the other thoughts. And as you look at it deeply, you begin to see that there are lots of different thoughts. Sometimes, I'm a great diver. When I was a kid, I loved to dive. So then I can think, oh, I'm great at diving. Or I can read, or I can drive a car, or I am this one, I am that one. And it's all true. But who is that I am? If you look deeply, you begin to see that it's pretty wavery. And that actually, when we meet somebody else, especially face to face, maybe one on one, and we forget ourselves, then what? Something happens. Something happens between us. Something that is us, that is always taking place, although we don't notice, usually. So that's another aspect of practice, is to develop the willingness to be with others, including the wisteria and the stray cats and the motorcycles and the bad drivers, all the things that bug us and that we love, to just be with them in that space between where everything is alive. Then we know what to do. We don't have to think it so much anymore. We know what to do. We know what to say without thinking of it ahead of time. We just speak the truth. So that's the other element of this that gets us to the very end where it says the bodhisattva depends. The bodhisattva is the enlightening being, not enlightened, but out there in the world, out here in the world, helping everybody to become enlightened. And this says, practicing with compassion in this deep way, the bodhisattva defines that she depends on wisdom, the inherent wisdom that we're born with, the home wisdom of our hearts. And the mind is no hindrance. Doesn't say all our crazy ideas go away. It doesn't say that the great me goes away, because it doesn't. It doesn't mean that we get perfect and we go off in some golden cloud. It means that we stay right here on the ground as we are, as we authentically are. And mind is no hindrance, and therefore no fears exist. Because fear is one of the most basic boulders in our way. We are fearful animals. This part of our brain is built on fears and instinct. And only much later did it get this beautiful little piece up here. So fear is endemic to us, and we need to come into very close knowledge of it. Really understand where it is and how to be with it, so that we aren't driven by our animal fear, but can use it as it's meant to keep us alive and well, and no farther. Not to make up stories about the ghosts and the goblins that are out there to get us, because those are lies. Those are fantasies. Most of our fears are fantasies. I have a friend who was terrified of crossing a bridge in her car and wouldn't do it. And she had to go to therapy, and they got in the car with her, and she got this far, and then she backed up and went away. And then she got this far, and then she got this far, and pretty soon she crossed the bridge. But it took a long time. So sometimes our fears are like that. We have to test them and see what's really true. So the bodhisattva life is a life of courage. It's not so easy. It's being willing to be here for everybody, not just for us. That's why we practice. I think we start out mostly thinking, oh, my life is a mess and I don't understand anything. I think I'll sit down and, like Buddha did, and then start realizing how big, how amazing, and how much work there is to do. So I think that's what I brought to say tonight. Are there any more questions? Too many words. Don't try to remember them. It's in you. Let's do a little more sit until 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Are there announcements first?
Yes, there is a one-day sesshin this Saturday from 9 to 4 right here at the meeting house. And we break for an hour at lunch. And you don't have to spend the whole day. Just as your time allows, you can join us. And Angie offers conferences in the morning about practice and a Dharma talk at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And, Jeffrey, are you opening the rest of the month? Or?
I have one more opening
Okay.
next Tuesday, and then I'll be
Okay.
in another practice for a while.
Okay. Ellie was kind of unclear about that. Okay. We do a 1 minute sit at the end.
Well, we've got 3 minutes, so let's just sit the 3 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.